Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, hoping that you're setting a spot on our dial. We've got baseball everywhere. Luke and I are headed to Toronto, Canada to kick things off before the Boston Red Sox come to town. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Fadley's on April the 2nd. Come on out, say hello. That's Wednesday. That's the day of the second Red Sox game. We'll be down at Lexington Market eating the big fat crab cakes. I'll have some shrimp salad, and we will have the magic eight balls to give away. I will be wearing this jersey on opening day. My guest thinks that number 11 was his jersey because it was. It came before him that I would have this jersey. Doug DeSensei, where have you been all of my life? I have your jersey somehow from like 1976. So the orange, somehow they put Aparicio's name on it. I found it in my size on the internet, $49.99. It's a bargain. How are you?
I'm doing great. I love that I had that number because your dad was my manager in Venezuela for a year, and I
He's my
got that.
cousin, but okay, but I now I want to know. You played for Zulia? Do you play for Aguilas?
No, I played for Barquisimeto.
Oh, okay. So
That was the 1 year he was there at Barquisimeto as a manager.
what was it, 75, 4-3, 2? Where were you?
73. Ray Miller was the assistant manager. Burleson was a shortstop. John Lowenstein was on the
Brother
team.
Lowe in Venezuela? Oh, all hell broke loose there now. Come on.
He was my roommate. We had some funny times.
Oh, how do you are you in touch? Because Lowe keeps in touch with me. He is the biggest celebrity in Baltimore that because of Angelos and the exit, he's never appeared. He's never come up for air. He's never sure. I know he's out in Vegas because he writes to me on my birthday and tells me he loves me. But I haven't talked to Lowe in 25 years.
I haven't talked to him in a long time either. I would love to. I think the last time I saw him was when I was back in Baltimore for something maybe 10, 15 years ago. I don't know.
Well, he is a legend here from his exploits on home team sports. Doug, how are you? I'm just trying to reach out to people, and I have this weird history with you in a way you don't even know about. In 1977 or 78, I was in Eastwood Little League, and we had a big ass banquet down on Dundalk Avenue at the Teamsters Hall, and in walks a strapping Doug DeSensei in a beautiful brown leather bomber. You look like you were ready to go out and paint it up disco style in 77, 78, but you were wearing my cousin's jersey, but you were the Oriole that came to our Little League banquet when I was a boy. I have a picture of you on a Polaroid.
Really? That's crazy.
I'm going to
That's
send it to you.
crazy.
Did you do a lot of that? Because players don't do that anymore. I mean, we love Gunnar Henderson, but he's not coming to your little league here. The Orioles did that work in the 70s. I know this to be true because I saw you there. Cal Sr. was at our church night at Our Lady of Fatima. We had a sports night. I mean, that was something you did when you were a player.
Absolutely. The Orioles were really good about that, and I was a strong believer in going out. I mean, heck, I have a story. You'll love this. I had, believe it or not, Don Drysdale and Willie Mays attend my Little League opener, and they spoke at the opener. Now, think about that, those two guys. And I sat there and listened, and from that point on, Don Drysdale was my idol. And of course, Willie Mays, I knew who Willie Mays was, but obviously, I really know who he is now. But I just knew him as a villain with the Giants, you know. But a couple of weeks later, I'm driving home with my dad after a Little League game, and Vin Scully was on the phone on the radio, and he's talking about a player named Dal Maxfield. And he said he works construction during the off season. And my dad's a general contractor and has his own business. And I turned to my dad, not forgetting what Don Drysdale told me that day, when he spoke. He goes, "If you love it, you can go do it." And I love baseball. And I told my dad, I said, "Dad, I know what I'm going to be when I grow up." 9 years old. And I said, "I'm going to be a professional baseball player in the off season. I'm going to work for you, just like Dal Maxfield does." I think Maxfield was playing for the Cardinals or something. I'm dating myself, obviously. But
I had his baseball card. I'm an old baseball guy. I mean,
Okay.
yeah.
Hey, so interesting enough, I'm driving to the 1979 World Series. I'm driving, and my dad's sitting next to me, and he turns to me and says, "Do you ever remember telling me that you were?" And I stopped him. I said, "Going to be a Major League Baseball player and work for you during the off season." And he goes, "How'd you know that's what I was going to say?" I said, "Dad, I've never forgot that." And that's what I did. I went home, at the end of the season to work construction with my dad. And that was a story from Don Drysdale from a little league. So now I'm going to circle back why that's important. Because I never forgot it. Okay. And I always, even to this day, when I go out and speak, I tell kids, look, not all of you got a chance of making it, but if you believe in yourself and this is what you want to do, go do it. And if it doesn't work out there, find something else you want to do and believe in it and go do it. And that was kind of my mantra all the way through. I just never forgot that. So going to speak to little leagues was something that I always did, even when I came out and got traded to the Angels.
See, I see Don Drysdale. I remember like Wes Parker was on the Brady Bunch in the 60s in LA. What, I mean, you really are a child of all of that, of the Dodgers coming to LA in the early part of your childhood. Where was your little league and what years were that? I mean, Drysdale was, they were selling baseball in Southern California then too,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. The Dodgers came in 57, I think it was. And I was nine, so it was 1959. And obviously, the Dodgers that year later went on to the World Series.
Little Louie almost took it away from him in 59. They
I
tried.
remember that.
They
I
tried, you
remember
know.
that. But, I just, it was a thrill for me as a kid.
Did you go to a
And
baseball game at the Coliseum as a boy? You
always. Yeah. Oh,
Oh, see,
absolutely. Saw
I
many
went in
games.
there for a Rams Ravens game. You remember Lamar came out
Sure.
there and ran 50 points in those purple jerseys and the Rams wearing those gold jerseys that one night. The only time I've ever been in the Coliseum, and obviously you think of the Olympics and the Raiders playing their USC and all that, but as a baseball venue, it's really hard to look at it and say the I see the pictures of it and the left field wall looks like it's about 190 feet
Yeah.
but it looks like you can play all day in right field, but that's a hell of a memory, because when I walked in there I felt the 100 years of it, and I walked in early and it was just, you know, it was a football a Monday night, but I was trying to say my cousin hit here in the World Series in this area of the end zone that was home plate, you know?
Yeah. And you would look at Wally Moon made a career of hitting high fly balls to left field. It was incredible. It just hit him over the screen. I think the screen was like 50 feet high. And but it was Nana went out to center field, and I can remember Duke Snider was such a great center fielder, but sometimes he'd run after the balls and it'd be so far out there, it'd be hard to see it because the field just went straight out and then they cut across. The not quite the end zone, but cut across and put right field over there. So left field was super short, and center and right center was like forever.
Oh yeah, I mean, and just looking at a visual of it, any of the black and white pictures is crazy. Dr. Senses is here, number 11 in your program, and out in Southern California, for you with Dodger Stadium, I gotta ask because I have such an affinity of all this. So you're a kid in Southern California, living that California dream, and the Dodgers moved to Dodger Stadium. First time you walk into Chavez Ravine, what are you, 13, 12, 13, 14 years old?
Yeah, about that. And I just remember one thing that sticks in my mind is that everybody had transistor radios back then, right? Okay. And you could hear Vince Scully talking, and they used to pump the smell of the hot dogs. And you would walk in, and you could hear Vince Scully, and you could smell the hot dogs, and you're looking down at this beautiful—I mean, it's a light blue stadium accented, and it's just spectacular as a kid, and you're just in awe, just in awe. And I was at a game where one of my later to become one of my teammates, but when Tommy Davis in the height of his career slid into second base and broke his ankle. And I never forgot that. Well, lo and behold, I come to the big leagues You know who is sitting right next to me in the locker? Is Tommy Davis.
Designated hitter Tommy Davis by the time he got to you, right? He was the first DH for the Orioles.
And so Tommy kind of mentored me. I remember throwing batting practice to him, and he wanted me to throw everything I had all the time, and I would, and he'd just get line drive after line drive. But those are the memories that I had as, with the Dodgers and all those different things. And I hit a home run when I was playing with the Orioles, and Frank Tanana was with the Angels. You remember they had Frank Tanana and Nolan Ryan, and this was Tanana, and he was lighting it up and hit a home run in the ninth inning to beat him. And it was a televised game back then, one of the few televised games that was being televised back to LA. Well, I was thinking, this is great. My folks get to see me and all those kind of things. So they come and get me and say, the Angel broadcast wants to interview you. So I go over and I'm sitting there, and quickly, who jumps over the fence and grabs a microphone and comes to me and says, All right, Doug, nice job. We're going to talk. And I'm just in awe. It was Don Drysdale
Doing the games for the
doing the
Angels.
color, and he was going to interview me. And I just went right away. I kind of blanked, and he asked a question. And I just said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry, but I'm so happy I hit the home run just to have you come down and interview me.
Did
I
you
said,
say you spoke at my Little League banquet? Did you tell him?
I told him, I said, you spoke at my little league. You're my favorite player. I idolized you. I went to the day they tired your uniform, the whole bit. And he just got so flustered. I said, I'm sorry. Let's get back to your question. But
He
that's
was.
when I was in the big leagues. Those things as kids never, necessarily, they never leave you.
Well, there's only
Just
one Oriole that came to my banquet. It was you. So, for what that's worth, Doug DeSensei is here. I'm trying to remember why I reached to you, and now I remember. When Brooks passed, I reached to some players. You and I fell, it just didn't happen. I don't know why it didn't happen, but that's really why I reached to you, I think, originally. And I don't think there's anything about where you're leaving this where we can't talk about Brooks into this, because you talk about this coming up, Tommy Davis, where you were. I never gave you that forum to discuss Brooks's life. And man, I can't imagine that. I've watched it with Ray Lewis here on the other end on football, like trying to replace that kind of a player. You don't really replace that player. We've not replaced Cal, 23 years later here. But you and Brooks will always be tied for anybody my age who watched it. And man, you had a hell of a career, but coming in behind Brooks, it's like Scott Rolen in Philly with Mike Schmidt, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, not many guys have been able to go on and have a career after they come in with this having to replace that superstar and stay in the city. And, I mean, when I was replacing Brooks, and I'm sure some older fans who are, if they're listening or watching, can remember that they're probably one of the ones that booed me, because whenever I got called up to go in or start a game, and Brooks, it wasn't Brooks, fans would start chanting, "We want Brooks, we want Brooks." Brooks was just, I believe he could have run for mayor and governor at the same time and won both races. I mean, he was the most popular guy and well deserved. I mean, I had a great relationship with Brooks. And despite many people thinking that we were in, angry competition with each other, that was not the case at all. But Brooks was just, he was just a solid, good person and would do things and was always so nice to people. And I always remembered that. And I always said, took note, those who make it need to be like that, need to be like Brooks. And it was a model for me. But I look back now, and people ask, well, what's the one thing you're most proud of in your career? And I immediately respond and say, being able to replace Brooks Robinson and being able to have a career afterwards. Because far too many guys that I saw in the big leagues that had to come in and replace certain guys. You brought Scott Rolen. I mean, they ran him out of Philly, and look what they did. They ran a Hall of Famer
Straight to St. Louis.
to Philly, straight to St. Louis, and it was all good. And in some ways, I felt like when I went to the Angels, I felt like, okay, that's behind me now. But the fact was, I was proud of myself to be able to, go through it. There's one time that the fans are booing so bad and everything. Earl came up to me and he said, "I'm going to take you out of the game. I don't want you." And I looked at him and said, "Over my dead body, you're taking me out." Because he was afraid that my career was, it was a stepping, he thought this was going to be a breaking point in my career. And it was. It was the point where I said, no way. And I went out and we lost it. We gave up 5 runs. Cuellar was pitching, gave up 5 runs in the first inning. And I remember diving for a ball down the line with bases loaded and went off the tip of my glove. And the fans all started chanting, "We want Brooks, we want Brooks." I could not do things right, even if, I'm not so sure Brooks would have had it. But anyway, and I can remember Belanger and the other guys going, "Hey, don't listen to that. Don't listen to that." And
It's
it's
funny
pretty.
because I don't think of Baltimore fans as being booing fans. Now, as a child at the ballpark, I think it was a little different. I think Camden Yards gentrified. We don't boo the home team here like the team stunk for the last 30 years, Doug,
Yeah,
right?
I know.
And there
I know.
hasn't like that. Feels a little old-fashioned in a baseball kind of way. I still hear it in New York, I hear it in Philly, you'll hear it in certain markets, but Baltimore's changed in that way, you know? And
Well,
I'm not
I
shocked to
think
hear you say that. I know it's true, but that wouldn't happen today, I don't think.
well, I mean, I think the people just, they just love the guy. And when you come to the ballpark, you're paying your money, you want to see Brooks Robinson. You don't want to see a young kid from California take the field. And if that young kid doesn't do well, they're going to boo harder, and but it was a reality. And no, a lot of guys didn't have to go through stuff like that. And I agree, when I l left and came back to Baltimore, when I come back and play, I almost felt like the artist who died and the paintings became famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where I was like, I felt really appreciated when I came back because, I played for the Orioles for 9 years and I felt like, I held my own and we had a lot of successful times and it was kind of time for, that Edward Bennett Williams, they kind of wanted Cal to play third, but Earl said no. You're not trading Doug because he's my shortstop. And the owner stepped in and traded me. And Weaver called me and after the trade, and he said, he told me the whole story. And he goes, "It's the first time in my career I have an owner coming in telling me who my team is going to be." And he goes, "I'm quitting after this year." And that was 1982. And he said, I'm gonna go through this year, but I'm retiring because I can't do that anymore. I can't have an owner tell me whether I'm not gonna, you're gonna fire me because I'm unsuccessful, but you're the owner and you're telling me who can play on the team." And as what history proves, what was it, 12 games or 15 games, Cal got moved off a third and played short, and history is history.
But that was a different time as well in that Grich, Baylor, Reggie, Garland, just going, and then the aging out of McNally, Cuellar, and those guys, the money of baseball and Reggie going to New York and what happened with Charlie Finley busting the A's up and trying to sell off Joe Rudy and all those players. Like all of, I mean, I was a kid during that period of time, but you went to a space where it was an all-star team by the time you had gotten to the California Angels at that point. But that was the Angels and Autry were a little late to the party to spend money. That was going on with the Yankees in free agency, and the Orioles were not a player in that. And certainly the finances of baseball were very different at that period of time.
Oh, definitely. The financing was incredibly different. TV hadn't taken off. Media hadn't taken off like it is today. The players today, people say, oh my God, these contracts and everything like that. Look, I'm a firm believer the owners, if you become an owner of a baseball team, you're a smart businessman because you've been very, very successful to be able to get into that position. And these guys aren't going to write contracts and sign different guys if they don't feel it's the right thing for them to do financially and improvement for the team and the fans and everything. And you see some things today that happen and you kind of scratch your head. But back then, Nestor, back then, I can remember, who's Ted Turner was signing guys to come to Atlanta. And I was like going, oh my gosh, they gave that guy that much, And that started telling everybody, hey, there is more valuable, there's value out there, and players have to go out and seek it.
Dr. Sensei is our guest, longtime Oriole, Anaheim or California Angel have at it. I tried to reach him during the Brooks thing, and we wanted to talk about that. Hey, it's opening day. It's a big week around here. We'll have a little fun, tell some stories. I've acquired this orange Aparicio jersey. And now they're wearing the old whole oranges, something you didn't even wear. It was so ugly in 71, they never brought it back again. They're bringing it back here in a couple of weeks. The 79, why? They want to look like pumpkins. I don't, what's ugly gets pretty again, right? I mean, I guess the 79 Orioles, I must talk to you about the 79 Orioles. This is a very special team in my life. I was 11 years old. I went to 31 straight Orioles games that year at home before you lost the game. I picked nights where you won a lot of games that year. And I've told Steve Trout when I ran into him, he threw a six-hit shutout. I ran into him out in Mesa at spring training in Arizona a couple years ago with Rick Tellender. And he remembers, he says, the best game he ever pitched in his life. Six-hit shutout, August of 79. The 79 year, and you and Dennis and Dempsey with the ORI and Wild Bill, I was at all of those games. I was a kid. You signed my glove, my Rawlings Tom Seaver glove in the summer of 79. For you and what you accomplished in baseball, 83 here, you weren't a part of it, winning for some of the guys here that were. 79 still the summer of love for me, even though it went seven and we are family and Omar Moreno, like all of that. I still, every time I see Burt Blyleven, I don't like him. I let him know that
Well,
too.
how about the song We Are Family?
I know,
I
Sister
hate it.
Sledge. I still hate it. It's been
My
50 years.
grandkids kid me, they'll put it on just to give they know I hate
Is
it.
79 a beautiful memory for you or
Oh,
still
absolutely.
ugly? Okay.
Now, you know what? It is a childhood dream come true again. Be able to walk up to home plate in your first game in a World Series and I hit a home run and it was like, I mean, I can remember out there with my neighborhood buddies playing wiffle ball, and we'd all go now batting for such and such in the World Series, and we'd try and smoke a wiffle ball for a home run or something. But to be able to do that, I mean, that's probably the highest point of my entire career.
Well, it was I still have my ticket stubs, and everything that went right, everything that went wrong, all these years later, I'm still not over that one. Just so you know, and I'm glad that at least it's a good memory because I didn't really want to bring it up because it didn't have the happiest ending, but I was the happiest at the ballpark in section 11 out in left field behind Reneke or Lowenstein, whoever's playing that night. And my dad, we got general admission tickets. We went out there and we really felt like we were part of something that some days I don't feel like I'm a part of it anymore, Doug, obviously all these years later, but there was something really special about that time in Oriole baseball that I believe Rubenstein and the new group is trying to recapture in some way all
I
these
hope
years
so.
later, because what was built there, Oriole magic as you would know it, and Ekman and the games on the radio and all, we're still eating off of that, as I see it. Eating off 79, not 83, not Camden Yards, not Cal. To me, we're still eating off of that era of baseball and the magic that was born in 79.
Dester, I can't agree. I mean, that was so special. I mean, our team felt. It was like when we came to the ballpark, we knew we were gonna, we had every chance to win again. And as a professional, when the game gets towards the end of the game and you're maybe down one or two runs, we knew what we had. We were a comeback team. We did things that were unusual, but we never beat ourselves. That was the big thing. That's one of Earl Weaver's great successes as a manager. Fundamental baseball, you never beat yourself. And, he grinded that hard in spring training and all during the season. But the team itself grasped a hold of the fact that this game isn't over till it's over. And there were numerous times coming back. And once that thing caught, Kenny Singleton was having such a tremendous year, and Eddie Murray was, I mean, it was just everything was folding into place. But I think the single thing after, that Oriole Magic night when I hit that home run, but Charlie Ekman
I
and
was
Chuck
there,
Thompson.
doubleheader, Tigers, the whole thing. I was there, Doug.
I got to tell you, the whole, I'll never forget coming out. It's like 10, 12 minutes I'm in the clubhouse and they pulled me back out and all the fans were still there. Where do you see that? Today's game, at least out here, California, if it's the seventh inning and they're losing by a couple, people start leaving the game. And it blows me away. It's like, gee, gosh, that's a little bit early, But back then, nobody left their seats. And you know what? The fans, I could, I think the fans were just as much as responsible for that Oriole Magic as the players were. Again, we had a special team, and we again never beat ourselves. We had great pitching, great defense, and power and timely hitting. But the fans played such an important role of that. It was, they felt a part of it. Now, if fans go to the ballpark today and don't feel a part of the team, or they feel like they're going and they're going to lose no matter what, that's hard to build. That's hard to build back to. So one, you got to have players on the field and that can play, and you got to have guys that have heart and play hard. And fans got to appreciate that more than anything. They got to appreciate somebody that's busting their butt, that's running out pop flies or doing everything they can. They're diving for balls, doing things. It doesn't mean you're going to win, but at least the fans should recognize that the players are giving everything. So why can't you as a fan?
Man, you said Eddie Murray, and I was gonna do Eddie,
Yeah.
Eddie. Like the hair on the back of your neck. There's nothing to replicate that, and the echo underneath of the mezzanine that would just roar, the roar from 34, 33rd Street.
Oh, well, Wild Bill Hagee was crazy. I mean, that was awesome what he did. But you're right. I mean, the players, like, we talked about John Lowenstein. John Lowenstein and Gary Renicke, they're one day's playing, next day not, whatever. Those guys were cr incredible together. And how they played defense and how they hit for power and drove in runs and Allen Bunbury in center with his speed. We always had Dempsey behind the plate that could throw anybody out. But Eddie Murray was, let's face it, one of the greatest hitters of baseball ever. Who else has 3,000 hits and 500 home runs as a switch hitter? I mean, pretty special.
Richie,
Pretty.
what about Richie Dower? We lost Richie
Yeah.
recently, and I knew Richie just a little bit, kind of the way I know you through doing all of this all these years. And there's a guy that stuck with the game and almost lost his life a number of years ago. In recent times, I hate calling all of you. We lose people. I try to call you an opening day and just get together, but we are losing some folks. And pay tribute to Rich.
Yes, absolutely. Richie was a Southern California kid, went to USC, came up. He was an incredible defensive player, never made mistakes, timely hitter. I never thought, though, I have to tell you, Richie surprised me. I never thought he'd go on to be a coach as a teammate. I never thought that. And he went on to be a superb coach.
A
And
lifer, a really,
yeah, I mean, a
really.
lifer, and I just didn't know if that was him, because he wasn't He was a jokester, but he wasn't necessarily somebody that was speaking to lead. Does that make sense?
He
In the
also had that
clubhouse.
incredible year at AAA, right? I mean, Rich and just you had so much talent, right? I mean, just sort of not just Brooks aging out or whatever, but Belanger, Gritch, just a wealth of Oriole Way talent. And I think you would say to this day that Oriole Way of the early 70s that literally was written down, the Oriole Way, that's what you were. I mean, that's what all of you were. Baylor, Coggins, Bumper, just go through the whole list of all of you that made it.
And if you really look, what's very interesting, people need to understand this. How many of those coaches, I mean, for me, I came up in the minor leagues and, I had Joe Altobelli for a couple of years. I had Cal Ripken Sr. for a couple of years. Cal was like my baseball dad. Really, I mean, we had a very tight relationship, and I
So
don't
you knew
know.
Cal when he was a little boy then, yeah?
Oh yeah, when in Asheville, Cal Jr. would come when he got out of school and stay with his dad, and the family would come as well. My wife used to drive and drop Cal off at his little league games because Vi was busy doing too many other things, but Cal Jr. would stand next to me. And Cal Sr. told Junior to say, "You stay with Doug, you take ground balls with him every day. You just stay with him out there in the field." And he would come and sit next to me at the locker waiting for me to go back out. He's 13, I think it was, something like that age. I had a tight relationship with the family, with all of them.
Well, it's no wonder you're all so close. All the, I mean, Rick's still here, Palmer, just all the Oriole family and the Oriole way of that period of time, and the fact that, I mean, I feel like you left earlier than you did, right? I mean, it feels to me like you played an appreciable amount of time in California. Same thing with Baylor and Gritch. Feels like they were there a long time. It feels like all of you were here longer than all of them were here, and to be a part of, let's say, Flanagan, McGregor, the trade, all of that that happened. Some guys in and out at various points disappeared, but that core that Earl Weaver held together, that a lot of them made it to 83. You weren't one of them. You were gone by then. But that period of Oriole baseball, we talk about college basketball now in the portal, guys change every year and stuff. Being an Oriole fan during that period of time wasn't just about collecting baseball cards and whatnot. It just felt like there was a whole era of knowing all of you. For a number of years, there was a real system the Orioles built here.
I couldn't agree more, Nestor. I mean, let's look at the coaching staff. We had Billy Hunter and Jim Fry. You had George Bamberger. You had Herm Stirrett. You had,
Billy
yeah,
Hunter.
that's why I said Billy Hunter
Oh,
was the
right. Oh, yeah,
first
I'm
one.
sorry.
Yeah, Billy Hunter
They
was the
all
first one.
managed, though. Hunter managed in
They
Texas.
all
Fry
went
went to
on.
Chicago, right?
They all went on to be successful managers. What does that tell you in baseball when outsiders see all this talent and these coaching? And they go in and grab those coaches to make them managers because baseball recognized that there was something different in Baltimore and that Oriole way, and they wanted part of it. And so that's why those guys got hired and went other places, and they managed for a long time. I was really happy to see Ray Miller come back and be a manager. I know he coached and did all these things. He managed in Minnesota for a long time as well. I mean, Jim Fry was, I mean, he managed for the Cubs and the Royals, and I'm not sure who else, but Billy Hunter was Texas, and I'm not sure where else he went.
Bamberger was that went to Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, and did a phenomenal job with that team. I mean, took them to the World
Well, we
Series.
sent players everywhere too, including you and Gritch and Baylor out to California to try to win. And Doug DeSensei is here. I do want to talk to you about current and being an ex-player. You're always a player. You're out in California. I've seen pictures of you and Fred Lynn show up and doing different things in Anaheim and what's going on with that franchise there during the Ohtani era. And obviously Mike Trout's a special player as well. You're still doing things and giving back. You mentioned me before you came on. Don Baylor's a part of something you guys do, but the part of being a former baseball player, not a Hall of Famer, but in a Hall of pretty good, that you've had a life, and you've done well for yourself in business, that you can give back and do good things.
Absolutely. I, you know, again, I'm a firm believer that just that, maybe I was just raised that way. My folks were involved in philanthropic things, and but I've always felt like it's such a gift to fulfill my childhood dream. I got to give it back. And Donnie Baylor, I had a golf tournament for March of Dimes for 10 years, and then after that I switched over to what's called Orangewood, is a home for abused and neglected children. I ran that for 20 years, and recently I just finished my 10th year. Unfortunately, I took over with Bobby Gritch. We co-chaired it, but Donnie Baylor passed away from cancer. But he had a tournament for cystic fibrosis, and a lot of people don't know what cystic fibrosis is, but my grandson was born with cystic fibrosis, and I played in Baylor's tournament for, I don't know, 20 years or something. And then all of a sudden to get the phone call that my grandson has it, and he's doing great, by the way, now because of all the funds that have been raised and the medicine that's been developed. And she's, it's something that affects their lungs and pancreas, and he's on a varsity basketball team on modern day out here. I mean, he's running up and down the court. I mean, phenomenal. But Bobby Gritch and I took over for Don Baylor when the last, we just had our 10th, the 45th annual Don Baylor Memorial Classic, we call it now. But, that's a long time. And guys from the Orioles, maybe it was the Oriole way. Maybe it was the fact that you were lucky to be there, and you appreciated it. And I know the Angels battle drastically just to get any of their players to sponsor anything. And I think it's just the way of today, and I don't understand it, because I went out looking to say, hey, we need another player to, take over. And the Angels, we went to the Angels and said, is there somebody that, a player that can do this? The answer was, now nobody's interested.
Well, the alumni, of the Orioles has always been strong, and the Ravens have
Strong.
built their thing here. I think you know about the Colts traditions here. When you showed up here, I'm sure you crossed paths with Johnny Yu and Artie Donovan.
All the time.
I think
Bert
Doug was
Jones, Bert Jones was my neighbor. We're still friends. We talked just the other day.
one of the greatest guys ever, Burt Jones, right? I
Yes.
mean, but that. Just you even saying that, it makes everybody here that would hear this smile of that era. But I do think there's something about Baltimore in that era and in my childhood that led me to own a radio station for 30 years to pimp these teams and try to make it. But they don't care like you cared. And that's one thing I'm saying to the Rubenstein people. And here's one thing I'm going to say. I'm going to leave you with this because you've been very generous with your time. And Doug DeSensei is here, everyone. Love him up. The original number 11, not really. He was not the first one, but he wore it better than anybody else. I want to say this to you because I don't know if you remember this or not. And you can blush if you wish. You can deny it, but it happened. When Bob Ehrlich ran for governor the second time, and I am not a Republican and I am not a Trump supporter, and anybody that listens to this knows this, but I supported Bob Ehrlich, and he did a sports night to raise money out at Martin's West, and you were a part of it. This is in the 06, 05, 06, 07 era, and I had just done Free the Birds on Angelos. And at that time, I'm taking heat, right, from people about this and that and what my intentions were, which were the same, which is fix the team. I'm tired of last place. I'm on the radio every day. I'm running complaint. I'm the complaint department here, taking phone calls for the Orioles for 12 years. So they hated me, like all of this. So I do Free the Birds. And some people came up and said really nasty things to me that had been on Angelos's payroll or this or that. In general, I walk the streets and I'm proud of. I'm more proud of that than anything I've ever done 19 years later. But you, and I don't really know you, but you came up to me at Martin's West that night, and amongst a bunch of players, there were a lot of players. I remember Howard Stevens from the Colts was there. There were a lot of players supporting Bob Ehrlich this 20 years ago. And you said to me, keep up the good work. You were the guy that pointed in my chest and said, I saw what you did with Angelos. Keep the pressure on him because this needs to get better here and they need to be challenged. And Doug, I don't think I've talked to you in 18 or 19 years. I don't know if you remember that, but that meant a
I
lot to
do.
me. That meant a lot
I
to me.
do. Well, thank you. I'm glad it did, because you know what? I have big part of my life is in Baltimore, and I want the Orioles to do great. I've always wanted them to do great, and I was sad to see the attitude and everything and how far they fell. My son played for the Orioles in the minor league system, and he was getting called to the big leagues because the starting catcher got hurt and the backup catcher had a sprained ankle and he was in double A. I happened to be there, and he sat in the clubhouse for 3 days because, as I found out later, that's when Ray Miller was a manager, Bruce Kieson was the pitching coach, Terry Crowley was the hitting coach. All teammates of mine, one
I
way or
saw
another.
Crow recently, by the way. They put him in the Hall of Fame here last year, but I saw Crow about 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
He's still betting the
King of
ponies. He loves
Swing. King of Swing. That's
them.
what we called him. But just to see how far it had fallen when the owner stepped in and said, basically told Ray Miller, he said, "You guys talked me into spending $48 million on a starting staff. I'll be damned if I'm going to have a rookie catcher catch him." And my son was coming up and, was hitting 320 and had 11 home runs and a bunch of RBIs and everything, and rightfully deserved to come up. He sat for 3 days, never left the clubhouse, and they traded for a backup. A like third string backup catcher to come in and catch because he was a veteran that had a little bit of time. And it was disheartening to see because if you run a minor league organization like that, where none of the players feel like they got an opportunity and you don't have solid coaching, solid things through the whole system, how do you expect to win? It's very difficult. And if anything, I've seen the greatest turnaround recently is the players that it's the players that they're bringing up. And for me, I mean, you look at the guys that they're signing. Hold on a second. You're looking for the guys that they're signing. And I mean, these guys are great young players. They're going to make a difference. And hopefully those guys, they set the pace for the whole organization to recognize you work hard, you're good enough, you're going to come up here and play. I mean, your shortstop, your second baseman, the futures, your catcher, the pitchers that they're bringing up, these guys are all quality players. And so the system has turned around from what I see. I'm not there, Nestor. You probably know a lot more than I do about what's going on. But in order to be strong, you got to have that base. One of the reasons the Yankees are so strong is they have a phenomenal minor league system and they can trade those guys to get what they need to win at the top. Without that strength, you don't, you don't survive.
Doug, I've been on the air 34 years now. Every year, every spring training, opening day, next 34 years I've been doing this professionally. And this is one of a handful of times, not really a handful, it's the only time in the history of the organization that they can begin the year and make a trade in July because they have the artillery and they have money. Because we're talking about, like, can they sign a $10 million relief pitcher right now to augment their pitch? We never talk like that for 30 years with Angelos at all. And certainly there was nothing to deal from. They would get out dealt in July, money aside. They didn't have any players to deal. Now they have
Exactly.
this strength, they have this ability, which is one of the reasons look, they're starting opening day next week. I don't think they're a World Series caliber roster right now, not pitching wise. I think they're going to need to get help, but I'm also of the mindset and the belief that the owner has the money and the organization has the assets. I haven't been able to say that out of this microphone since I've owned this radio station, and I've owned it for 27 years.
Well, I have to say, again, I'm not there. But I'm happy about the new ownership. I think it was a much needed change. But when you come in and it might be difficult for him to come and make a radical change in his first full year. might be difficult. He needs to get the lay of the land. He's got to trust his baseball people. And you do have talent. And it are you there yet? You're in a tough division. Doesn't mean you're not. It doesn't mean you can't. But you do have to build from on what you have. And if you don't go build on what you have, then I mean, look at the Orioles made that trade for Rick Dempsey and Scotty McGregor and Tippi Martinez and a guy named Joe Pagan. And they traded Paul Blair and Elrod Hendricks and
Kenny Holdsmith was in that deal, right?
who?
Kenny Holdsmith was in that deal, I think.
Yeah, I was just to say, and
Mike
Kenny Holdsmith.
Torres, was Torres in that deal too? Maybe somewhere.
Yeah, Torres, no, I think Mike left as a
He
free
left.
agent.
Yeah, he left later. Okay,
He left as a free agent, but he ended up going there.
that's not bad.
But
It's been 50 years, and we can remember most of it.
well, yeah, but think about that. Dempsey was there forever. McGregor was there forever. Tippi Martinez was there forever. That was a great trade. Was it risky? Because yes, none of those guys had played. I mean, Dempsey had played a little bit. McGregor had a little bit of time, and Tippi, showed a lot of promise, and I think that they got that. But that was a smart organizational move, moving. And then look at we traded McNally and Coggins
For Kenny.
to get Kenny Singleton, and what a trade that was. And so I think Don Preece was involved in that. I know he's a Hall of Famer as well, Oriole Hall of Famer, and rightfully so. He's the one that wrote the book, The Oriole Way, and I think they need to stay with that. And baseball doesn't change that much. I think hitters today got to stop thinking about hitting home runs every swing and start hitting the ball hard and play hard. And I like what I see. I like the guys. I mean, Gunnar Henderson's a great player. I love the third baseman. Why am I drawing a blank? He wears my number.
Westberg.
Westberg. I love him. I watch him play. I watch his approach at home plate, and I'm going, this guy's going to be around for a long time with that. So I know he's got number
I'm
11.
not letting you get away with saying it's your number. It's our number, Doug. Come on
All
now.
right.
Oh, Doug DeSensei is here. I made him laugh. I'll let him get back to the good weather out in
Sorry for
California.
that. I don't want to take that on.
Doug DeSensei is back with us. Always a pleasure, and it's been too long. And I'm appreciative of all the relationship, this fun little thing we have where I call you and you get to come on here and talk a little baseball and live some memories with me. Stay safe out there. Keep doing what you're doing, and we'll stay in touch. And maybe we'll bring you back here for a little World Series thing at some October and relive 79 a little bit.
I would love nothing more. I honestly could. I would love nothing more because, you know what? As I said, Baltimore, I have a strong place in my heart for Baltimore. And, I think the city and everything that where it's come, and I know it's fallen back a little bit. Well, it needs to be brought back up to where it is because it's a great place to live.
Well, I'm going to find that Polaroid because I have it. It's literally, it came out of the little camera. It's the one you had to wait 30 seconds for it to appear like a
Sure.
ghost.
Yeah,
I
that's
have it, and I think you may have autographed it because you could have. So I have it, and I promise to send it to you just to show you how handsome you were back in Dundalk in 1978.
Well,
All right.
that was a long time ago, I can tell you that.
Well, once handsome, always handsome. Doug DeSensei's number 11 in your program, number one in your hearts, joining us from Southern California. We're getting ready for Oriole baseball. Luke and I are headed to Toronto, Canada. I've got my Canada hat out. I got my passport ready to go. I'm ready for opening day, and so is Luke. We're going to be Pizza John's on Friday with Maryland Lottery scratch-offs and the Magic 8-Ball. We'll also be back on April 2nd at Fadley's before the second Oriole game against the Boston Red Sox. As they said in the movies, play ball. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore baseball. Great Doug DeSensei. We're Baltimore positive. Stay with us.